Hello and welcome to this year's final regular season episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I am Tyler, joined by Matt. And Matt, I think we have a very logical place to start here. The very last play of the regular season, Matt Grace, of all people, makes a three falling over at the buzzer that would have sent the Richmond's game against St. Joe's to overtime. But he got it off about a tenth of a second too late. I was fully prepared to vote for that for game of the year when I thought it had went down. I don't know where I'm going with this. I don't know if this is a story about the fact that Richmond's at-large bids are truly, truly now burnt to a crisp, or the fact that St. Joe's is now 3-0 with Ryan Daly on the team.
This is the first winning streak of the Billy Lang era. So congratulations, they had never won back-to-back games, and now they're on 3-0, so that's huge for the Hawks. As for Richmond, I think you're right, they're in some big trouble now. It sucks for Matt Grace, he's an A-10 fan favorite. He's going to step right into the Grant Golden role next year. He's already got the hair to match, but too bad he couldn't finish their regular season on a high note.
Yeah, it had a chance to be what would have been the biggest play of Matt Grace's career, but Richmond actually falls in a big way in the bracket. Had they finished off that game, they would have been the 3 seed. Now they're the 8 and met with a very, very, very daunting task to the auto bid. The level of talent on this team makes me believe that it's possible, but you get Duquesne game one, Bonaventure game two, and then either St. Louis or UMass, probably St. Louis, in the semifinals. That's just to get yourself to the finals. This is not going to be easy for the Spiders. Plus, they lose Blake Francis to an injury in the first half. He tried to play through it and couldn't. Makes me believe there's a decent chance he'll be back come Thursday. But then Grant Golden never came back from his normal last rest of the second half. We don't have any news on that, but the Spiders are just they're in a terrible shape right now.
Yeah, the Spiders are the 8 seed. I don't think anyone thought that could happen. I've seen some pictures of the old billboard popping up. I don't know if we're going to see those resurface over the summer or not, but man, that's just disappointing. And I know they've been one of those teams that were affected by some COVID pauses this season, but yeah, they've got to win 4 games now. I really don't think they have any chance to get in that large.
They don't, and I really didn't think that they did before this game, but it's now officially over. But meanwhile, on the other end of the spectrum, what I had thought was dead after they lost to VCU, St. Louis's at-large hopes are not completely finished off yet. I would still say they probably have to make it to the finals, which if they do so would most likely involve a Q1 win over either the Bonnies or Richmond. If they can add that to their resume to kind of offset their lack of any road wins outside of Rose Hill, it's not impossible. And they're coming off of just a dominating, crushing performance over UMass tonight.
Yeah, that was a big win for them. I didn't see it. And it's impressive after UMass gave them 2 really good games last season. So I thought that could be a tough matchup for the Billikens. But I don't know. I'm not quite as optimistic for their at-large hopes. We talked about this last week, but they still just have the 1 road win against Fordham. Honestly, they had a nice win on Friday night against Richmond. A really fun game to watch. But honestly, that looks a little bit less impressive now. And I don't know exactly, but I'm pretty sure beating Richmond in the A-10 tournament would not be a Q1 win anymore. I'm not sure if it would have been to begin with, because it has to be... Well, I guess technically it's an away game, so it actually could be. I don't know
it's
how the
neutral.
Net's going to...
It's top 60. Or no, it's...
I think it's top 50 for neutral.
Yeah, it's top 50.
It depends, maybe.
I guess
like
Richmond just fall out, but if they beat the Bonnies, they could get back into the top 50.
I mean, maybe if they ask to like play the game at the Robin Center to get that road game boost. I don't know how the net would handle that, but I don't know. I kind of think St. Louis is in some trouble if they don't win the A-10 tournament. We'll see. I just think it's one of those things where they really got hurt by the shortened season because the analytics still like them pretty well. It's just that their resume, like if you compare it to just a normal season, they only... I guess they ended up in 4th place in the conference, but They only won 6 conference games, going 6-4. That's just not a great winning percentage. So we'll see. I mean, hopefully it might just come down to how much the committee respects the A-10, which usually isn't a whole lot.
And by the way, about seconds after you said that, glance down at Twitter. Wayne Epps, the great reporter for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, was just answering a similar question from someone else and said that the conference is going to be designating all of the tournament games as neutral, despite no matter who plays in them. So even if VCU has a game at the Siegel Center, which it looks like they are going to play in the Siegel Center all the way till the finals, that will still count as a neutral site game and not a home game.
That's questionable. I don't like it. I mean, I know a lot of people still don't like it that it's in Richmond to begin with, but I mean, with no fans or limited fans, I'm assuming it, I guess it doesn't make a huge difference, but still, that's a tough building to win if you're not the home team.
Yeah, and, you know, guys get their comfort with certain locker rooms. I'm sure they're probably still staying in their apartments as opposed to a hotel, so at least a little bit of an advantage there. But I guess the two biggest stories of the week, although it's been a long week, we had VCU beating St. Louis. That came after the last time we recorded. Then St. Louis bounced back and beat Richmond. But, you know, the closer things are, the more important they seem. So really the two biggest stories at the moment, Davidson beats VCU, no Bones Highland, and they lose Vince Williams midway through the second half. And then Dayton stuns St. Bonaventure despite Jalen Crutcher being in foul trouble most of the game. So I'll let you pick which one you want to jump into here.
We can start with Davidson and VCU since that one happened first. And honestly, I didn't see this as a huge surprise just given Bones Highland's injury. And also, I'm still on board as Davidson being a pretty good team. And they ended up with the 3 seed. We'll talk more about them later and their chances in the conference tournament. But overall, pretty impressive performance for the Wildcats. They didn't hit a ton of three-pointers, but they also limited turnovers. Only hit 11 against VCU, which for a team that puts as much pressure on the ball as the Rams, that's impressive, and that's certainly one of the keys to winning. I don't know about you. My favorite part of this game was the toughness from Sam Meninga, fighting for some loose balls, staring guys down. He had a really good game.
I'm going to be honest. Actually, for me, this game was about Luka Brajkovic. Because the threes weren't really falling for Davidson, and Brajkovic basically just dragged them through the mud in that game. I lost the stat sheet, but he ended up going, I believe, 7-for-8 shooting. He was just posting up any big guy that VCU would throw at him, and he was really the only reliable source of offense for either team in what was just a messy, messy game.
Yeah, sort of was. Not really what we're accustomed to for Davidson, really. But yeah, Brajkovic, so he went 7-for-7 on two-pointers. He missed 2 threes. And really, a lot of guys on Davidson weren't shooting that well. But you're right. I mean, he's quietly had another solid season. He did that just in 19 minutes, too. But yeah, definitely a good performance for him.
Yeah, and, you know, we're going to talk about our awards later. He didn't make it and didn't even quite get to honorable mention, but he was a guy that when I dug in was at least worth the research to see whether or not he could make an all-conference team. In the end, he just suffered from horrible inconsistency, but there were a lot of big moments this year, especially you think about that game, you think about the Dayton game where in big games, when the threes weren't falling for Davidson, they really, really relied on Brajkovic, and he came through a lot when they needed him to.
Yeah, and I think for Davidson, too, they've just been one of those teams where they're not really a deep team. I mean, they only go about 7 or 8 deep every game, but, you know, Kelvin Grady's the star, but it seems like any given night they have a decent number two option, whether it's him or Lee or Collins. Any one of them can have a big game, and you know, if they get 3 of them going at one time, that's where they could maybe make a run in the tournament. So it's good to see him playing well going in. I also thought Davidson, I mean, it's easier to do it without Bones Highland on the court, but I thought they had a pretty good defensive game plan for VCU too, just holding them in the 50s.
Yeah, they certainly did. They really flustered Ace Baldwin in a way that St. Louis wasn't able to. That was really the key to VCU's win on Tuesday if we want to go back there. I mean, they still didn't get much on offense from any of their role guys. It was just Baldwin and Vince Williams stepping up to get them through that game. And Williams actually was great for VCU before he got hurt. He was the one guy kind of keeping them in it. But no, Davidson blitzed Baldwin hard, and, you know, it kind of flustered him. They were relying on Jameer Watkins a lot, and as much as I like him, he was not good in these two games with a heavier role.
Yeah, he wasn't. They also didn't, you know, they looked better in the St. Louis game, but they didn't have TV Teddy on their side either. No, I'm just kidding, but gosh, that was funny against St. Louis, the reaction that got. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, VCU, I think when they're healthy, especially after seeing St. Bonaventure lose to Dayton at home today, I think they're the best team in this conference. The problem is they're just a question mark going in. It sounds like Bones Highland and Vince Williams are both day-to-day right now. If they're both healthy and playing their full workload of minutes, then I think they're the toughest team to knock out. But they're definitely a much more different team without either one of them on the court. They're just their two best three-point shooters. Bones creates more than anyone on the team, and they're going to be in trouble if they're not ready to go. So hopefully they are.
Yeah, so let's hold that discussion here for a moment. We definitely want to go into our A-10 tournament preview. But just the very last game that I think is important to touch on here, Dayton knocking off St. Bonaventure, really was not an impressive Dayton offensive game, which you would think would have had to happen to pull this upset. Jalen Crutcher in foul trouble in both halves, ends up fouling out with less than 4 minutes to go, but the Flyers persist on without him. They were incredible on defense, and I think for the two of us, the best part of the game was getting to see RGA Blakeney really come into his own. He was so great that first month of the season when he was forced to play big minutes. He got hurt, came back really slowly, and, you know, you compared him to Trey Landers. It's probably a little bit aggressive of praise at this point, but for the most part, he has a very similar skill set. He's a little bit better of a ball handler, not quite as good of a rebounder, but he does profile as the same type of glue guy.
Yeah, I really think he is. I think once he gets stronger later in his career, he could really make an even bigger impact. But I loved his defense tonight. He ended up with 9 points and 5 rebounds, hit a three-pointer. And overall, yeah, it was the first start of his college career too, which was exciting. But you're right. I definitely wouldn't have expected Dayton to pull this one off with the offensive game they had, only scoring 55 points. And Crusher just had 6 before he fouled out, so he really wasn't much of a factor. But just a lot of credit to Dayton and their role players for stepping up. Amzil also had 9 points. A couple of the other freshmen, Kobe Brea, although he didn't have a great game statistically, he got 21 minutes, which I believe is a career high for him. So good to see some other guys get an opportunity heading into the A-10 tournament, because that might be something Dayton needs if they potentially make a run and play 3 days in a row, which I don't really think that's going to happen, but they might need to use the bench a little more like they did tonight.
It was the best that they got from the young guys all year, just kind of collectively as a crew. And they really were. Everyone was great on defense in this game, which is tough to do when you play so many guys who aren't used to being out there. But they really smothered the Bonnies. And, you know, it's kind of tough for St. Bonaventure to win when their whole offense is Jalen Hadaway shooting tough threes. That's exactly what you want as a defense. They push Bonaventure out to the perimeter. And I guess this ties perfectly into the A-10 tournament discussion. Should we be concerned about the Bonnies? They've really just kind of been chucking up threes these last few games. It went great in the two against Davidson, but it's not their best pathway to a win.
Well, all right. So we need to address this because, you know, I got called out a little bit for our last podcast and some of my thoughts on the Bonnies. I said they weren't a great 3-point shooting team, and they actually did finish the season at number one in percentage at 37%, which is crazy. And I think it did go way up after their Davidson games, where they lit it up each of those games back to back. But I do think you're right. I still don't know if they should look for threes, because they still don't score that high of a percentage of their shots from beyond the arc. They do a lot of their work inside. I don't know. Attaway actually went 3-for-7 against Dayton, but a couple weeks ago, he wouldn't even think about taking a perimeter jump shot. Now he's taking 7 threes in one game. That's kind of interesting to me. I don't know. I've gotten the feeling from the Bonnies, and maybe this is just some of the games I've watched them. Like, I felt this way in the St. Louis game too. It just seems like once you have them behind in the second half, they're not really a team that's built to make big comebacks, because they do tend to play a slower tempo a lot of the time. Even though they are a good three-point shooting team, they don't always take a bunch of them. And tonight, they just couldn't really get the offense going. The defense is still always going to be their strength, and they had a great defensive game, forcing over 20 turnovers against Dayton. But I don't know. This is kind of a concerning offensive game, especially after Dayton just gave up 97 against St. Joe's the game before.
It was a nice bounce back. It kind of restores our faith, or at least restores my faith in the Flyers and their ability to do some damage this week. So, A-10 tournament, the four double byes go to St. Bonaventure, VCU, Davidson, and St. Louis. I'm trying to look at maybe some potential betting opportunities, some potential sneaky picks. And when you do that, you just realize there is a huge, huge gap between the top half of the bracket, where Bonaventure is going to get the winner of Richmond, Duquesne, and then you have St. Louis potentially against UMass. Bottom half, it's a still beat up VCU. It's Davidson, it's George Mason, it's Dayton, and it's Rhode Island. So any potential for a sneaky winner is going to come out from that side. They're not my pick to win it, but I just want to throw out there, Davidson at plus 850 to win the tournament is very tantalizing.
Yeah, I think so, especially when you consider they only have to win 3 games to do it. And I think the odds came out back when, I mean, they were posted this morning. I think we probably would have expected Richmond to get the double bye. So their odds at plus 375, it seems kind of strange they'd have way shorter odds there. Yeah, I definitely think Davidson. I mean, I would say they are the weakest of the double bye teams, but not by that much. So getting them at twice as good, or in the case of VCU, almost 4 times the price, yeah, I could buy that.
Yeah, and really, when you look at the odds, they did a pretty good job of keeping them low. I think there's really only 6 teams that are going to have an argument to win this tournament, and maybe even as low as 4. If Richmond's still struggling with the injuries, with how badly they've closed this season, they're probably not an option. And it depends on how much you're willing to put stock into Dayton making a run. Really, it feels like this is going to be VCU, Bonaventure, St. Louis, or Davidson. I might get burned on this, but I really like the Billikens right now. I just think they're going to be pushing a little bit harder. VCU, like we said, they're hurt. The Bonnies, if they can get to the semifinals, are probably pretty secure in their at-large bid. I don't think St. Louis is going to take anything for granted. And, you know, we know they own the Bonnies too. And
yeah,
I can't see UMass turning around 4 days after this crushing blowout and spinning the tables on SLU.
See, that's the interesting thing. I do agree, if we do get that 1-4 matchup, St. Louis has really had the Bonnies number the last couple years, and I'd kind of expect that to continue. Just I think their physicality gives the Bonnies some trouble at times, and it did in the first game a lot. I don't know. I'd be really interested in that UMass-St. Louis game if it happens, although you never know with UMass. They could – St. Joe's could very well be on like they could
much.
Be on a 5-game winning streak.
LaSalle could beat them too, honestly.
But – God, now I really want to see St. Joe's make a run to the quarterfinals. Oh, man, yeah, that would be a 5-game winning streak. But let's say that there is chalk and UMass plays St. Louis. I mean, going into this game tonight, I thought UMass was going to give the Billikens a much better fight. In the 2 games we saw last year, Trey Mitchell had great games both times. UMass won one of those games, their home game, and then they took the Billikens to overtime on the road. So I thought this would be a much closer game, but St. Louis really dominated them from start to finish. We have seen, though, this year, not a ton in the A-10, because we haven't had a a lot of like back-to-backs, but in other conferences, it's been kind of noticeable that when two teams play each other twice in a very short span, the results can be wildly different. And I'm not saying that's going to happen again, but I wouldn't be that surprised to see at least a closer game the second time around. I don't really think St. Louis is going to blow them out again if they get that opportunity.
I'm just not sure how healthy Trey Mitchell is right now. He obviously missed about a month. He's come back his first two games. He just doesn't look that good, honestly. And the path to a big UMass upset starts with just a huge, huge Trey Mitchell performance. He only had 10-5 tonight. I think he's got to go 25-10 for them to pull it off.
Yeah, they would. Although he did. I mean, he flirted. He didn't even get the triple nickel, but he had 10-5 and then 4 assists, 3 blocks, and 3 steals. So that's probably the closest we've come to a quintuple nickel this year, but you're right. If Trey Mitchell scores 10 points, that's probably not going to be enough for UMass to beat any good team. I don't know. I do have to say this on UMass, and I feel bad about it because I think their fans have a point when they argue about this, but I'm kind of glad that the 4 double bye spots went to the teams that got them because I think they're 4 deserving teams. I mean, UMass honestly played a pretty weak schedule to get to this point, and they also just missed a lot of games, which is unfortunate. I know George Mason was getting thrown around as a possibility, but I am kind of happy that we got 4 very deserving double bye teams, in my opinion.
No, I mean, it really does feel right. Felt like kind of the 4 best teams. Richmond just, you probably throw Richmond up there, but they've really just kind of crumbled in the final weeks here.
I mean, they lost to LaSalle and St. Joe's at home. Like, they can't really complain. I know they missed some games, but you know what? I mean, you got to win those games if you want to get a double bye. I think they just missed too many opportunities. And if you look at their conference schedule, their only really impressive win is at Davidson, which that is a good win. But they lost to VCU, they lost to St. Louis, they lost to the Bonnies. They didn't really beat any of the other top teams. So I don't think they have too much room to complain in that regard.
Yeah, they definitely don't. And that's kind of where I landed with them. I don't think there's really any team that has a spot to gripe right now. The only one would have been St. Louis because of how bad they were coming off the pause. I think the 4 seed is pretty fair for what their season has been, and even with the bad luck.
Yeah, I think so. And we'll see. I honestly wonder if, like, I feel like them getting the 4 seed, obviously that helps them with winning the A-10 tournament. I almost feel like in terms of potentially getting an at-large bid, which we talked about it already. I kind of have the opinion that they're not going to get one anyway, but I almost wonder if they started on Thursday and won 3 games before potentially losing in the finals, if that might look better. Because that would just be an extra like Q2 game against somebody or Q3. But anyways, yeah, no, I think the top 4 teams, like, that's fair, even in a shortened season like this. I don't know. I'm looking at the bracket right now. I don't really see any teams from outside the top 4 that I feel that confident in. Dayton's always just the wild card because how much they played at the level of their competition. We'll see, though. I really don't like the VCU matchup for them, even if the Rams are not fully healthy. Those games just haven't gone well at all for Dayton. So I much would have rather seen them play St. Louis or St. Bonaventure in a quarterfinal matchup. But, I mean, they still have to get through Rhode Island first anyway. And Rhodey's a team also, too, where even as a 10 seed, they could maybe win a couple games. They already beat VCU once and Dayton once.
And so we'll go more in depth on the specific games, especially in the quarterfinals later in the week. But right now, just looking at this bracket, I guess really the two big questions, who are you predicting to win right now? And then, as I've mentioned, I think there's going to be at least one just earth-shattering upset in the quarterfinals. So which non-double bye team do you see making it to the semis?
I don't know. I think Richmond, even though St. Bonaventure is a really good team, and Richmond's not playing that well, I still think they're the most talented of the teams that didn't get a double bye. And their first game against St. Bonaventure, that was really close. So honestly, I think that would probably be my pick, especially just because of how the one seed tends to do in this tournament. Hasn't gone well very recently. So I think I'd have to pick Richmond, honestly. And that's not a shot against the Bonnies. I just think they're a lot better than Rhodey, Dayton, Mason, UMass, and Duquesne.
I ended up really not liking a lot of these hypotheticals compared to what I did a few weeks ago. I guess I end up not really liking the real potential matchups as opposed to as much as I like the hypotheticals. I think the biggest issue is I've lost so much faith in Richmond. They really are just kind of crumbling before our eyes. For me, and I wonder if this will just end up being the trendy upset pick, but it's got to be Dayton over VCU. Just not knowing what the Rams are going to look like. And even if Bones comes back healthy, can he carry the load in the way that he normally does? Dayton plays up to their competition. Everyone's healthy on that team right now. They certainly aren't going to get slapped around by them for a third time. They just have too much pride. Anthony Grant's too good of a coach. And maybe they end up losing again. God knows it wouldn't be a stunner with how badly they've handled that. The press this year, but this is where getting them a third time really, really starts to create an advantage. They have so much film built up on those first two games, and there's going to be some good adjustments this time around.
Yeah, I would hope so as a Dayton fan. And I don't know, that is one of the big cliches in basketball, team 3-1 season. I also just over the year, even the VCU fair share over Dayton, it seems like historically Anthony Grant's done a decent job with his teams handling the press. Obviously, he didn't start Havoc at VCU, but he's run some aggressive defenses when he coached there in the past. And it seems like usually his teams know what they're doing. But this year's just been a really different story for Dayton. Even if their big win against St. Bonaventure, they turn the ball over so much. And you just can't really afford to do that against a team that likes to run in transition as much as the Rams. So I don't know. I think they've got a chance. I mean, they've shown that they can get up for any opponent. And maybe the third time will be the charm. But I mean, I could also see Dayton losing to Rhode Island. They haven't won an A-10 tournament game since 2016 now, so it's been a while for them. And I don't know. As a fan, I want to say they have a chance, but as a fan, I also feel like I know better.
Well, the one other thing I want to add in for that, their biggest bugaboo against that VCU press this year has been just really a resistance to having Jalen Crutcher bring the ball up against the press. I think they're trying to use him as like an outlet attacker if they break it, and certainly just try to keep him a little bit fresher. Season's on the line at this point. Like if you're not just riding him, no matter how much it's going to exhaust him, then that's just a complete failure. So I think that they're going to have the ball in his hands. And if they do, they should not have much of an issue dealing with it, or at least not anywhere near as much as they have in the first two matchups.
Yeah, and he got a rest tonight too. He only played 22 minutes against St. Bonaventure, which is way lower than any game he's had this year. So hopefully he's ready. He's going to need to have a big game if they get to play.
Yeah, they're going to ride him to hell and back this weekend. This is it. He's going to play some big, big, big time minutes.
Yeah. All right. I just have anything else on tournament predictions? Because I just have one more quick thing.
Just if you want to throw in a winner, I'm going to loosely say St. Louis right now. I'm sure we'll both end up filling out brackets in the next 36 hours and putting that out on Twitter. So.
Yeah, I gotta think about it. I think right now, I think VCU is the most talented team, and I'm hoping. I mean, just as a, someone that roots for the conference, I hope Bones is healthy, because he's just so much fun to watch. And I also like if Dayton gets to play VCU, I want it to be at full strength. But I think I gotta pick the Rams. They've looked really good this year. Defense wins championships. But yeah, I'll try to do a bracket. We can post those this week. The last thing I wanted to talk about, just real quick, GW Fordham, big rivalry. That's how we ended the A-10 tournament last year. hopefully it's not how we end it this year at the on the second game of Wednesday. But any thoughts on that with Fordham coming back from a pause?
Yeah, it's the Jamie and Christian revenge game. And, the GW fans got mad at me for saying that because they crushed them this year. Look, Fordham's coming off of a pause. They've looked pretty bad the last few weeks before the pause anyway. Like, GW should pound them in this game. And I guess really the only path for Fordham winning this is if Josh Navarro can just push James Bishop into just a wildly, wildly inefficient game, which James Bishop is very privy to. But, he's going to get his shots up. And if he's playing at his normal level, he's going to get to 20 to 25 anyway. And all of a sudden, when you talk about a Fordham game, like 25 is about half of what you need to win the game. So,
yeah, that'll be an interesting one. It's kind of hard to pick Fordham when they haven't even played in a couple weeks and they're also just terrible to begin with. But just looking at GW, since they came back, they've played 3 games and it's pretty hilarious. They beat Rhode Island by 8 at home. They were ahead of George Mason most of the game on the road. That would have been a nice win. And then they lose to St. Bonaventure by 47 points, which that's the most lopsided A-10 game I can remember. I don't think I've ever seen a conference game decided by 50 points. So hopefully that's a wake-up call. But yeah, I think it will be a revenge game for GW after what happened last year. And they beat Fordham easily the first time. I don't think they're messing around.
Yeah, and last thing I want to throw in here, because I know we definitely will not have any new pods out before this game. I assume Richmond will be heavily favored against Duquesne. They should be. They're the more talented team. They're a veteran team basically trying to salvage their tournament bid at this point. But just throw them on upset watch. Do not be surprised if the Dukes can actually – slay two demons at once. They haven't won an A-10 tournament game in half a decade, and they're 2-24 against Richmond this century. But I just don't like what I've seen from the Spiders since they came back from this last pause. And even if everybody's healthy, like, it just has not looked right. There's a lot of things that were off in that St. Louis game. They weren't getting gold in the ball. Things just really weren't clicking. It happened when they played Duquesne last time too in the second half, and Gilliard really just kind of bailed them out in crunch time. But the Spiders just don't look right, and Duquesne's playing their best ball of the season right now, so something to certainly look out for.
Yeah, they are. Duquesne bounced back after losing to LaSalle. They beat Rhode Island pretty handily, so I don't know. I've liked Duquesne all season. I think their perimeter defense is going to be big against Richmond. I just do agree, though. I think Richmond's the more talented team, so you never know. They've also been super inconsistent, so that is a great way to start off Thursday. Should be a really fun one.
Yeah, it's going to be a terrific 8-9 game. It's a little early. It's at 11 a.m., but
it's will so definitely mid-major. Be fun.
Take your long lunch breaks. Most people are working from home, so maybe take like a permanent lunch break. I don't know. I'm not advocating anyone doing anything that'll get them fired from their job, but certainly 2 days to be able to take some liberties, and especially because the NCAA tournament starts on Friday this year instead of Thursday. So everyone always takes some liberties twice that week. You're only doing it once. Maybe take some liberties to watch Duquesne and Richmond.
I also just noticed, so I guess this year is going to be different with there being two sites for the Thursday and Friday games. There's no break, so it's 11 a.m., 1 p.m., presumably at different stadiums, and then 3:30 and 5:30 both days. So that's kind of nice. No breaks there. Hopefully there's
not
too many.
I need a breather.
Yeah, that would be kind of nice.
I'm about to embark on 8.5 hours of basketball, and as much as I love it and I love the straight through, like, it is really nice to just have like 20 minutes in between the game to just stretch your legs and think about something else. But
yeah, should be fun though. It's going to be fun. We didn't get this last year, so yeah, we'll see. I mean, I do think there are a lot of teams that could win it. It's not like last year where even though it didn't happen, I mean, there was kind of an overwhelming favorite. Even 2 years ago, there was a pretty overwhelming favorite in VCU, and they ended up losing the first game. But this year, it seems very even, and I could really see, you know, easily any of the top four teams winning it, and then a couple more. I mean, you never know if, like, Richmond or Dayton, they could make a run, too. But
yeah, it will be fun, but, you know, we could really lock in on this. But we got something funner to talk about, and that's awards. I want to take a moment to talk about Purple Stride Pittsburgh, which this year will be a virtual nationwide event. Pancreatic cancer is the world's toughest cancer with a 5-year survival rate of just 10%. Pancreatic Cancer Action Network is determined to improve patient outcomes, but they need your support now more than ever. That's why Purple Stride Pittsburgh is going virtual this year. Join PanCan on April 17th and turn your neighborhood purple to help raise awareness and vital funds for pancreatic cancer. Learn more and register for free today at purplestride.org/Pittsburgh. That's purplestride.org/Pittsburgh. You know, by the time we will be putting this out on Tuesday morning, we don't know when the conference is going to put out their awards. Typically, it would be on Tuesday, but who knows, with the season ending on Monday instead of Saturday, they might want to give the coaches a little bit extra time to submit their votes. Honestly, they're probably either doing that or they just had them submitted ahead of time anyway. I can't imagine all the coaches are getting ready to do it tonight. But we have our ballots ready, and we will be putting out the A10 Media Awards tomorrow, unofficially sponsored by the 3Bid League Pod. And so we wanted to really talk about our ballots, give some explanations before we post those on Twitter. And so I guess I'll let you take this. Where do you want to start here? Should we do the obvious one that I think we both really agree on?
Sure. I really don't see too many obvious ones, so maybe you can enlighten me, because I had a tough time with most of these awards, to be honest.
I will say, I think this is going to be the most controversial year of awards in a while, and that'll be fun, because it's been too obvious the last few years, especially last season.
Well, it was tough, too. I think that the hardest thing, like, some teams only playing 10 or 11 games in conference, that's just not a big sample size. So, like, I'll just say right now, for teams like UMass, I didn't know what to do with some of their players. You know, same with St. Louis. They didn't play that many conference games, and that made it tough this year. But, yeah, I don't think there were that many clear winners for any award.
So I guess let's just start at the top. Player of the year.
I think it's got to be Bones Highland.
Hurts. See, I knew we were going to agree on this one. That's why I wanted to start there.
It sucks that he missed the last two games of the season, but I mean, he carried VCU on offense a lot this year. He's a really good defender too. I think we've talked about what he's good at plenty, but yeah, I just think the fact that VCU ended up in second place, they look not quite a lock to make the tournament, but they're pretty close. I think you got to give it to him. He was the best player on arguably the best team.
So I would say he was the best player on arguably the second best team. But to me, it's – I guess there's really three different ways to attack this. If you want to look at the narrative, which a lot of people do, sure, they didn't win the conference, but Bonaventure just simply had a better roster. They had a better ensemble. They had a better coach. If you take Kyle Lofton off of St. Bonaventure, they're still a pretty good team. They probably don't make the NCAA tournament, but they're still a very good team. If you take Bones off of VCU, I think they might be playing in like the 8-9 game right now. If you want to take a stats approach, he played 11 games in 2021. In all of them, he had at least 16 points and 4 rebounds. His averages over that span, 21 points a game, 6 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 2 steals. And that was the piece for me. It was the consistency. We saw so many of the other stars in this league really disappear in various big games. Crutcher, Lofton, Goodwin, Golden. Really, you can pick and choose anybody. Mitchell. And all of those guys had at least one huge dud in a big game this year. Bones didn't. He was just flat out terrific in every game. And while he didn't have some riveting tear-the-house-down 35-point performance, he was an A or an A-minus every time he stepped on the court. VCU knew he was going to carry their offense night in and night out.
Yeah, and I, what I really liked too, he really, I thought he improved over the course of the season. So if you look at his KenPom game log, the first five games, he was still scoring a decent amount of points, but four out of those five games, he had an offensive rating below 100, which is generally, 100's a pretty good game. So if you're below that, it's nothing special. And I was just worried. I think I was thinking at the time that Bones is going to score his points, but it might not look pretty all the time. And it certainly seemed like he was forcing it in a couple of those early games they had, like against Penn State. But his efficiency by the end of the season ended up being really good, despite him taking as many shots as anyone in the conference. Shot a really good percentage from three at 38% on really high volume is not something you see very often. So, yeah, I just think the fact that he was able to stay efficient on really high volume throughout the entire conference season, really, I think that's huge because VCU just didn't have too many other guys on the team that could just have huge scoring nights.
So I'm so glad you said that because that's how I wanted to close my argument. He was first in the conference in shot percentage, so percentage of possessions finished with him either shooting or drawing a foul. So, and just an incredibly high volume of the ball in his hands. And so sometimes that can tend to lead to some artificially jacked up scoring numbers. But he also was 13th in the conference in true shooting percentage. And so just to put up that level of efficiency on an absurd level of usage is just a really rare thing. And a lot of the guys above him, really the only other guy who was carrying the same load that finished above him in true shooting was Jalen Crutcher. Other than that, you see a lot of guys like Kyungjoon Lee, Jamison Battle, Noah Fernandes, Nathan Kao. These are a lot of guys who were really, really efficient, but just didn't do it on a heavy workload. And so for Bones to be able to do that on the amount of possessions he had to carry is just really, really impressive.
Did you have a second place for Player of the Year or anyone else you were considering, really?
No. To me, Bones actually kind of locked it up about a week and a half ago. And it wasn't even one of his performances that did it for me. I was thinking about Jordan Goodwin for a while. I was thinking about Lofton for a while. And both of them just had some mediocre games down the stretch. And really, you look at the Bones game log, it was so impressive how he did it night after night. Really, the only thing that would have lost him the award was if he put up a terrible game in the final week, and obviously he just didn't even play. You saw how bad their offense was without him in overtime against Mason and then the whole Davidson game, and that actually his team stinking actually helped him.
Yeah, that's true. I considered Goodwin. I'd say he would have been my second choice, but yeah, he did have a couple quiet games. Didn't play that well against Dayton in either game. He didn't play well in LaSalle. So when they lost, he kind of tended to struggle. But I just think with Goodwin, too, the reason I considered him so much, just the balance of offense and defense. Really good on both ends. Had a ton of triple nickels. I need to add them up. I actually don't know who ended up leading the league, but he had a bunch of them down the stretch once he was getting some more time at point guard, getting more assists. So really fun season for him too, but yeah, I thought it was pretty clearly Bones.
So I, you know, we've agreed a lot on these the last 2 years. Like I said, I think this year's going to be different and I want to get to the hot takes and the arguments, but real quick, I want to knock out one more. And this, I actually know we agreed upon. We did not share our ballots beforehand. I think we know two or three tiny things. This one we talked about beforehand, Asuna Shunahi as Defensive Player of the Year. And to me, this was really obvious, and he really helped his case in the final game, just really swatting everything that Dayton threw near the rim, no matter who it was. And so I want to throw out a few stats here, because just like with Bones for Player of the Year, you can take this from so many different angles. If you want to reward someone who led a good team, Well, the Bonnies were first in scoring defense and first in field goal percentage defense going into this last game. I can't imagine that those changed after this performance. Oshunahi was clearly their best player all year. If you want to talk about some team analytical defense, well, right on over to KenPom. They finished second in adjusted defense for the year, slightly below St. Louis. They were first in effective field goal percentage defense, and they were second in field goal percentage at the rim. And all of this is despite the fact that they were 11th in takeaways. So to be able to have the best scoring defense, but really not force that many turnovers, really just speaks to your individual defenders. And then the last thing I'll just throw out there, if you want to look at Oshunahi's individual stats, he was second in the conference in blocks and second in defensive rebounds. I think it's an ironclad case. To me, he was the best guy on the best team in a team that was really, really led by their defense this season. So, yeah, Jacob Gilliard got a ton of steals, and he was awesome himself. But the Bonnies D was just so much better than Richmond's this year. And Gilliard's individual accomplishments really kind of rival Oshunahi's individual ones. So, to me, the choice was easy.
Yeah, I think so, too. And when it comes to defensive awards, and we'll talk about this more when we get to our all-defense teams, but it's hard with, like, individual defensive statistics. It's hard to know how much weight to put on that. Like, for Gilliard, yeah, you got a bunch of steals, but your team's still giving up a bunch of points. Like, how much is that worth? And I do think Gilliard had another excellent season, so that's not to put him down. But you're right, the Bonnies won a lot of games with their defense this year. And I just think, to me, the most interesting thing, for the last 3 years now, they've been in the bottom 60 in the conference each – or in the country each season of allowing three-point attempts. And that's just because teams need to change the way they play against St. Bonaventure. You're not going to be able to attack the rim against them. This year, St. Bonaventure's team defense improved because they were able to defend the perimeter well in addition to the paint. But, yeah, I just think Oshun, I mean – he's the anchor of what ended up being, I think, the number one ranked defense in the A-10. I think they actually passed VCU. So great season for him. Yeah, I agree with everything you said. So we'll have to find another award to have some hot takes on where we disagree.
And here's where I think it's going to start. So,
all right.
You know, we struggle every year to go through our all-conference teams in a way that is efficient time-wise. So I think I personally want to really focus on the first and third teams. I think that that's where a lot of the controversy is. I think the second team is basically just the guys who didn't make first team to me. So you want to start with your first team. And just a reminder to everyone, we do five-person teams. That's how many people are on a basketball court. So
yeah, that's why our polls matter more than the A-10s. Those are fake. Those are participation trophies. We don't do that here. So, all right, I can go first. Bones Highland, my player of the year. Of course, he made it. And then Jordan Goodwin, who I had in second place. This was pretty tough, but my other three were Jalen Crutcher from Dayton. Grant Golden from Richmond and Kyle Lofton from St. Bonaventure.
Okay, so it's a little bit closer than I had hoped. To me, the two that I'll back you up on here real quick, just super easy to me. Jalen Crutcher, that's an obvious one. I don't care that Dayton was near the middle of the pack. He himself was utterly excellent. And if you want to skim through the game log, his biggest games were also the games where Dayton had their best performances. 26-7 in a huge bounce back game against George Mason. 29 points in the overtime game against Davidson. In the two St. Louis games, he had 27 points in the first one and then put up 22-5-5 against them. After last year, when he was the second best player in the conference, he came back. He kept his assist numbers the same. He shot the ball more because he had to take on that extra burden, yet managed to keep his shooting percentage actually slightly better. He was about the same from three. He was about 1% better from the field. He jacked up his points per game. It didn't look as pretty this year. It didn't look as impressive. That had more to do with the fact that he wasn't playing on a super team anymore. He himself was just excellent and had he not just been horrible both VCU games, and had Dayton been a little bit better, for me, it would have been a real fight with Bones.
Yeah, and you talked about how VCU would have looked without Bones. I mean, how would Dayton look without Crutcher? They could have been a pillow fight team. I mean, I'm scared to see what next year's going to look like, even though I think Dayton's got some good pieces. But, yeah, he was crucial to the Flyers this year. And you're right. I think him and Bones were really the two players that could just put a team on their back. I mean, Bones did that on a better team, and that's why I think he was the player of the year. But, yeah, no, even though Crutcher didn't come from a great team, it was a pretty easy choice for me to put him on the first team.
So those two for me were just really, really easy. And then I basically had three guys jockeying for the last five spots. So I guess we'll go with the two that I had the same. Kyle Lofton, just really the leader of the Bonnies. I'm not sure he was their most important guy on either end of the floor, but he was certainly the second most important on each side. And so you add that together with just the little things he does. The fact that he was fourth in assist rate for an offense that really spread the ball around. They had five guys scoring double figures for the year. He's the reason that beautiful egalitarian system existed. Pretty good perimeter defender. The emotional leader of that team. And so I actually had him on second team when I first drafted it up. I thought about it again. I consulted with some people who knew the Bonnies a little bit better than myself, and they told me that was crazy, and I trust them. So Kyle Lofton, first team, easy for me. The other one was Jordan Goodwin. Just the two-way excellence. The fact that St. Louis ended up getting the double bye certainly didn't hurt him in the end. He put up a double-double for the year. 3.3 assists per game in conference play. When they lost Yuri Collins, Point Goodwin, a dream of mine for years, finally happened. And guess what? He was excellent at it. So I'm almost kind of bummed for him that he's not going to win Player of the Year. I thought that award was his to take this season. But the St. Louis struggles just kind of took him out of it. He has to be on first team, though, because of the two-way excellence.
So who was your last pick then? So we disagree on Grant Golden.
So I actually I was originally seriously thinking about taking Golden over Goodwin. In the end, the defense was the tiebreaker. And so that's where I landed on my final pick. The defense has to matter. And I think that's the big problem with how people vote on this is everyone gets sucked in by the offensive numbers. Once again, like we just talked about, Asuna Shunahi was the most important defensive player on the best team, on a team that was led by defense. I get that he only scored 10 points a game, but he was second in defensive rebounds, third overall in rebounds. He was clearly the best defensive player, and he got a fair amount of unregistered hockey assists throughout the year. It's not like he was just a black hole on offense. They used him in the post a lot. He just didn't get a lot of assists because he was the guy leading the big swing around the perimeter. So for me, I'm rewarding the big defensive superstar over Grant Golden, who, as much as I love his offense, he's actually a negative on defense.
I don't know. He used to be. I think he's gotten better. I don't think Golden was as good last year or as he was last year on defense, and it hurt Richmond's overall team defense. But I don't think that's a bad pick at all. And I was actually struggling for a long time which St. Bonaventure player I wanted to put on the first team. Kind of the same as you. I had Lofton on the second team for a while, switched him around. I think Oshun is a good pick there. And he actually is on the old KenPom analytic team. So, I mean, the numbers don't lie, I guess, with that. Yeah, you're right. His defense can't be overlooked. I just think for Golden, even though I guess I am picking someone from the eighth place team now. I think he's so important to what they do. You're right about his passing ability. It's just something that's so unique to the conference. And I just felt like he was able to maintain really high efficiency. He's got the ball in his hands all the time. I mean, basically acting as a point guard at 6'10". And I don't know. Richmond overall had one of the best offenses in the conference, and I just feel like he's the biggest reason why. So that's why I went with him, but I don't think you could go wrong with Oshun either. I don't disagree that much there.
So I'll defend Golden in a second because I think he's still the most misunderstood player in the conference. But the last thing I want to throw in for Oshunahi, and this is, you know, this goes on with media, with coaches in the NBA and college, with everything. Guys just don't value defense enough. And especially for a guy who is, I don't know, slightly above average offensive player. He's certainly not bad. But I think of it this way. Like, you know, Oshun, he's slightly above average on defense. I mean, Oshun, he's slightly above average on offense. Jalen Crutcher's slightly above average on defense. They're both just all world on the other side of the ball. So why wouldn't I value Oshunahi the same way I value Crutcher's contributions, just because what he's doing is not showing up in the stat book? So for me, I actually will say, when I put this together, he was the third guy on for me. Like, that was a no-brainer, obvious thing. It was really Lofton versus Holmes and Goodwin versus Golden for those final two spots. Oshun would have been non-negotiable when I was figuring this out.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting. I think it's fair, though. I remember in the preseason, I was interested to see what's Oshun going to do with a bigger offensive role, and he really didn't get it because the Bonnies ended up being a way more balanced team than I thought. I didn't think Jaron Holmes was going to average 16 and Jalen Attaway was going to be so good. So he ended up really not needing to do that much, but he was still very efficient when he had the ball, shot over 50% from the field. He's actually, I think, an underrated passer too. He had an assist rate over 10, which is pretty good for a 6'10 center. Not quite Golden levels, but I mean, he's definitely not a negative offensive player. I just think he didn't put up the huge counting stats that some guys do, but I mean, certainly you're right. He's above average easily. And then with his defense, that makes him still one of the best players in the conference.
Yeah, I just thought that there were two really special offensive players. That was Bones and Crutcher. And two really special defensive players. That was Oshunahi and Gilliard, who we'll get to. And then Lofton and Goodwin were both next level on one end of the ball and really, really good on the other side. Just terrific two-way guys. And I guess Bones was pretty good on defense too.
Oh yeah, Bones is really good on defense. But yeah, all right, that's all I have for first team. Do you want to give second team?
We'll go to the second team. And I'll note, for me, I had 11 guys that were just absolute, you have to have them on your all-conference locks. So all five of these guys are obviously included in that. The two other guys I was debating for first team, Grant Golden, and I guess I'll touch on him real quick since you just did. He's still horribly misunderstood. He's absolutely in play for first team. He's the reason that Richmond's offense worked. And you kind of saw it in the St. Louis game first half when he was really struggling with the finger injury. You just saw what happened when the ball wasn't in his hands. He is the cog that makes that team work. His passing just really makes them go, even though he didn't have as many assists as Gilliard. And you just look around, he was one of only two guys to finish in the top 20 in points, rebounds, and assists. The other was Jordan Goodwin. He was third in the conference in assist rate. Yeah, he's the leader of an offense that was tops in the conference in field goal percentage. They were third overall in assists. And, you know, I've called him the fulcrum all year. He really lived up to that. He had a 3.6 assist to turnover ratio in conference, which was best in the conference. That was better than all of the point guards. Grant Golden, the leader in that category. So, to me, he was an obvious guy. Although, if we were doing six-player teams, and if I'm saying who should be on the conference's first team, I would actually give a third Bonnie on there. I think it should be Jaron Holmes. I think he was their most important offensive player all season. And you really look, the games where he struggled, the Dayton game where he just couldn't get things going, the VCU game where he was in foul trouble, the Rhode Island game where he had back spasms. Those were the three terrible offensive games for St. Bonaventure. He was the critical engine behind that offense, and I think that he should really be rewarded for that. The rest of the second team, Trey Mitchell, he put up awesome numbers this year, but he also missed some time, ended up only playing 8 conference games this year. UMass was good, but not great. I couldn't argue for him to be any higher, but the stats warrant him being in the top 10 clearly. Jacob Gilliard, another guy with not wonderful stats, although he did rack up a ton of assists. Just like with Ashuna, he is a special level of defender, and you have to factor that in here. And then the last guy is Marcus Weathers, who really just slammed the pedal down to close out the season. He ended up finishing second in the conference in free throw rates. And one thing I really want to point out, and you can take small sample sizes here, just given the small season that we're going through. And I will say, I waited a little bit, guys, closing strong. Because it took players so long to get things going and get into a normal rhythm, I wanted to value that. And in Duquesne's last six games here, where they went 4-2 and really kind of came into their own, Weathers put up 21 points, 8.7 rebounds, and was 14th in the conference in field goal percentage over that span. 14th for the whole year. He was super efficient despite taking a lot of tough contested shots all year. A lot of the guys above him were just kind of centers catching the ball in the dunker spot. So maybe not the best stats for the full year, but you got to reward Weathers for closing strong.
Okay, yeah. Overall, I like your team. I agree with a couple of them, but I want to step it back a bit. So if I understand what you're saying about Jaron Holmes, how he would have been on your six-man team, are you saying the Bonnies had three of the best six players in the conference this year?
Yes.
This is where we'll disagree, because I think if that was true, the Bonnies would have run the table. They lost, what, four conference games? I don't think that's possible if they truly had three of the best six. And I think, you know, I didn't have Oshun on my first team and I didn't have Holmes, although I have them on coming up later. I just feel like they were a really well-balanced team. And, like, you could make an argument for any of their five starters to make one of the teams, but I just feel like they're way too balanced of a team to say that. Well, I mean, I did agree, like, with Oshun on the first team, I think that's a fine pick. I don't know if I would go quite that far for Holmes, though, although he did have a great season, but I don't know. A couple of those games, like you mentioned, with foul trouble, I think he kind of have to count that against him, too, when he didn't play well. The Bonnies didn't either, a couple of those games, but I don't know. That's kind of what my thinking is.
You got to remember, too, they only had 5.5 guys, basically. So
yeah.
They were an excellent team. And, yeah, all five of the starters were fantastic this year. But they had to spread out an even bigger workload than you would normally see for those players. So
I guess
in the end, too, it really just kind of came down to the fact that I couldn't make the argument for another guy to displace the third Bonnie.
Yeah.
Golden had a rough close to the season, and I did this before the St. Joe's loss, but that certainly doesn't help him either.
Yeah, that's fair. I just think it would have been like if Trey Landers made the first team for Dayton last year when they went 18-0. Like, I think you could argue with, like, his stats maybe didn't quite live up to it, but he was one of the most important players in the conference. And I think you could say that about Holmes, because he's got a big role with St. Bonaventure too, but I don't know. He did have a great season, though. One of the most improved, for sure. But anyway, I'll get to my second team.
I just want to throw in real quick, though. I'm pretty sure I made the argument that Trey Landers should have been the sixth guy on the first team last year.
He could have been. Yeah, he wasn't. He ended up on the third team, I think, which was...
That was obscene.
Too low, but...
I had him as the best guy on my second team with five-man teams.
Yeah, but I think that makes more sense because Dayton went undefeated. Like, St. Bonaventure, I mean, they got the one seed, but they're not clearly the best team in the league. I think it's really close with them, VCU, St. Louis, and even Davidson.
Well, I was going to mention this with the third team, but the star power just wasn't as good this year. It kind of harkens back to 2 years ago, and I think this is where COVID affected the season.
Yeah.
Is there was just not the same level of excellence that we saw last year.
That's true. All right. Well, I'll give you my second team now. I also had Trey Mitchell. It was really tough. That's what I meant when I said I don't know what to do with UMass, because they just didn't play that many games, and then also Mitchell was hurt for a few of those. Still put up good stats when he was on the court, and I think he's still one of the most skilled players in the league, but I just couldn't really make a case for him on the first team with not playing enough games, frankly. I had Oshun already talked about him, and Marcus Weathers too, who I think you made a good case for him. Just had a couple huge games down the stretch for the Dukes, and I think he's a big part of their really impressive defense too. Just a really tough player all around. The two that I think we disagreed on, I had Kellen Grady for Davidson and then Javonte Perkins for St. Louis. And really with both these guys, I just look at them as two of the best scoring players in the conference. And I think they both just served really important roles on their teams. For Davidson, even though I already talked about how they had some good role guys that could step up any given night, I think Grady was still pretty clearly the leader. I don't think they get to third place in the conference without him having a really good season. And he's another guy, not as impressive as Bones, but he had a really high usage and still maintained efficiency too. And then same for Perkins. I mean, he still might, even though he was only on the second team, I guess maybe I'd put him behind Bones now, but he's one of the best pure scorers in the conference. And even though he doesn't do a whole lot on the rebounding or defensive end, I just think his pure offensive game makes him a pretty easy second team choice for me.
So Perkins was my 11th and final. They have to be on one of the all-conference team locks. In the end, it really came down to two things. I guess I kind of directly took Weathers over him. But for sake of this argument, I took Gilliard over him because of the defense. And also, one thing I wanted to throw in with Gilliard is just the efficiency and the fact that he never gave the ball up. I mentioned Golden's stellar assist-to-turnover ratio. Well, Jacob Gilliard was second in the A-10. He also had an assist-to-turnover rate over 3. He doesn't score much, but he's just excellent in everything else. He takes care of the ball. He's kind of the quintessential perfect point guard for an offense with that level of talent. I can't argue with Perkins being on the second team. I think it's actually where he'll end up on the actual all-conference team with the 6 guys. But I just couldn't take him over Gilliard just because I don't love what Perkins does on D.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And honestly, I thought for a lot of the season, Perkins looked like a first team guy, but he did actually decline just a little bit in conference play. His 3-point shooting was only around 34% in conference games. Which is fine. I mean, he still overall shot the ball really well this season, but after what he did, I mean, shoot, we were talking about him as the player of the year favorite for a couple weeks there. Early on, didn't quite finish as strong, but yeah, I mean, he still had a great season. And also, we just got the news too. He will be coming back probably definitely in the A-10, the most high profile senior that's going to use that extra eligibility. So that's huge for St. Louis, and that makes them a lot more interesting next year.
Yeah, well, you also hit the nail on the head, and this is why I ended up taking Weathers over him. It was the close. Perkins was excellent in the non-conference. He did not replicate that down the stretch, and that was a big reason why St. Louis was unable to generate offense in some of those losses. And really, for me, the tiebreaker was Perkins is tailing off right now, and I don't know what to expect from him going into the conference tournament. And Marcus Weathers, over the last month, is literally just playing the best basketball of his entire career at the moment.
So I guess I want to talk about Kellen Grady because I had him as an easy second team choice. I actually had him on my first team for a little bit, and then I moved him back because he really didn't play well against VCU or St. Bonaventure in the second game. So he didn't finish well, but I still think overall he shot 37% on 3-pointers, leader of one of the most efficient offenses in the conference. I don't know. I really think he was a pretty easy second team choice for me. So I'm just curious why you didn't have him.
So I had 11 guys basically battling it out for the final 4 all conference spots. Grady was the first one of that group of 11 that I put on. So he basically was 2 slots off for me. He was super inconsistent this year. I know late in January, I really thought he was starting to get it going. He didn't, or I guess it was early. Wow. It's actually early in January. And then they went on the big pause, but he just couldn't carry it through from game to game. And I think a big reason why he was good was because of how great the guys around him were. I think the Davidson system and how well the talent was spread out among that offense really elevated everyone on that team. Now, they were the best offense in the A-10 in terms of adjusted efficiency, and Grady was clearly the best player. So to me, that has to equal an all-conference spot. But he just, game to game, was not consistent enough. He really only had one huge, like, really wow your performance, and that was in the loss to Dayton. And overall, the counting stats just weren't what we typically expect from him from a scoring perspective. So I really just never even gave him that much of a consideration for a higher up team. But I do agree, he definitely has to be on all conference. He's the one guy of my wild cards that I would have actually fought on if you had left him off entirely.
So his 7 3-pointers and 25 points against Southern Virginia didn't do it for you? That didn't change your mind?
I think I literally crossed that out when I printed the game log.
Yeah, no, you should. I guess just for me, something else I liked about Grady a lot, and this doesn't all fall on his shoulders. Some of the other players helped him out too, for sure. But Davidson's offense didn't really skip a beat losing such a transcendent player in John Axel Goodmanson. I know Grady handled some of the point guard duties. It was probably mostly Carter Collins, but I think that was impressive too, that he was able to just lead an offense that lost such a key player. And I think he was mostly responsible for that. Although you're right, he did get a lot of help too, just a lot of really talented offensive players on that team. But okay, so that's our first and second teams. Anything else, or ready to move on to the third team?
No, I'm ready to go to third. So yeah, I think we can kind of go one by one here, because I think this is where it's going to get really weird. So I mean, obviously, yeah. I started with Perkins and Grady, as we've already talked about. So I'll let
you. Yeah, and I have Gilliard and Holmes, who we already talked about there. So I guess we each have three more players. I'm hoping some of them are different, but I'm not really sure. I can give my first, though. Pretty easy choice for me was Jordan Miller for George Mason, who George Mason ended up as the sixth seed. They quietly had a decent season, and I just think Miller really solid three-point shooter. Ended up as one of their leading rebounders, too, at just under 6 a game. I just feel like Mason kind of needed that go-to scorer this year, and he was the guy, which I thought it might be Javon Green or A.J. Wilson, but he was pretty clearly their best player, I thought. And I just felt like with Mason finishing in sixth place, ending up with a winning record, I had to get someone on the all-conference team. So that was sort of my rationale for him.
I had him too. So by this point, I threw out a few kind of random honorable mentions. And my last three spots basically came down to six dudes. Miller ended up being the best of that group to me. It's basically the same argument I just made for Grady. He just wasn't quite as good. It was like, it's the same thing, but 5% less. Mason was a good team this year that was basically led by committee on both sides of the ball. But Jordan Miller was clearly their offensive leader. And while they certainly didn't blow anybody away on offense, I actually think if you'd take him away, that offense would have been a disaster this year. And there were a few games where you really saw coming down the stretch, he had to get them one-on-one ISO buckets. It wasn't a particularly clean year from Jordan Miller, but I think a lot of times he just simply did what he had to do to drag that team through the mud. And I felt like that needed to be rewarded.
Yep. I think so. I mean, if I had to pick, like, in the preseason, I think anyone would have had A.J. Wilson or probably Green ahead of him. But, yeah, pretty big breakout season for him. And next year, too, he's going to be big. So another third-team guy for me, I had to go with Vince Williams from VCU. I just think
– damn it, that was my next guy, too.
Yeah, well, see, we're not going to disagree on any of these. Right now, we have 14 of the same guys.
I was really relying on you to say something – totally stupid right now. We should have brought a third guy into this.
I know. Well, my last pick's going to be stupid, so that's okay. No, but Vince Williams, I mean, VCU absolutely needs two guys on the all-conference teams. I mean, they're just up there with the best teams in the conference. Williams turned into an elite three-point shooter, which no one could have guessed. And with him also just being solid at getting to the rim and playing defense, just a really he's established himself as such a good all-around player. So, you know, his counting stats aren't that great. I mean, I don't have his stats in front of me, but he's not averaging as many points as the other guys I have on this team. But, I mean, really, that's just how VCU is. Outside of Bones, they're kind of by committee. But he just fills his role so well as a three-point shooter and a stopper on defense. So I had to go with him.
So I tried to really ignore the whole VCU should have a second guy narrative, and I still got ended up on Williams anyway. And at this point, everyone who's left, because once again, the star power just not as great as it was last year. Everyone left has one huge fatal flaw. There are some guys left who put up huge numbers on super high usage and poor efficiency. There were guys left who were horrible on defense, even though they put up great offensive numbers. There were players who were good for the year as a whole, but were super inconsistent. And then the last group is the guys who were just really good, super reliable all season, but didn't necessarily put up great counting stats. And so for Williams, I'm more than willing to ignore the kind of lack of top-notch counting stats. 11 points a game, 5 rebounds per game. It's not going to jump off the page on for you. But simply put it, there's just no other great star left to make the case for over Williams. He was excellent in every facet of the game. He was their number two leading scorer for VCU. Terrific on defense. Shot 42% from three. He crashed the boards. He kept the ball moving for them. Picked up plenty of hockey assists. And so I'm just going to take a guy who was just excellent at every moment he was on the floor, no matter what it was that he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about how important Bones was, but I don't think VCU finishes in the top four really either if Vince Williams doesn't become one of the most improved players in the conference. And, you know, hopefully he's able to get back on the court for the tournament. But I think the fact that he was finally able to stay healthy for a full season until now, unfortunately, but I think that's a big reason why VCU was so good this year. He's really, we now know how important he is to that team.
All right, so who's the final guy?
My last guy, you're probably going to disagree here, and I actually changed it tonight based on the outcomes of the final games, but I had Ibby Watson for Dayton. Really, I'll tell you who it came between him and Blake Francis, but in the end, with Richmond losing just another terrible game, I couldn't put three spiders on here. I feel like they're both kind of similar players where they're crucial to their teams because when they're hitting outside shots, their offense just flows so much better. But overall, Ibby Watson's a guy that took on a much bigger role last year. He was kind of just a role player as the sixth man and would just pick his spots, but he was never like a go-to scorer. But that kind of had to change this year. And I just think he had enough big games shooting the three where I felt like he was valuable enough to warrant an all-conference selection.
So I think I was biased as a Dayton fan where I truly going into this week felt like there was no way you could put him on an all-conference team. He was just too inconsistent and disappeared too much in big moments. And then you dig into his numbers and realize he's actually pretty close. And had we done a full 18-man squad, I would have put him on it. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll actually work backwards here. I wanted you to just say James Bishop or Fats Russell so I could fight you on it. Bishop's turnover numbers are utterly disgusting, and his stats actually went down in conference play. They're kind of buoyed up by a lot of games in non-con where he took a ton of shots. Fats' shooting percentages are awful. He shot 32% from the field this year, and he had a lot of burden on his shoulders, but Rhodey's too talented for him to not be a little bit more efficient this year. So I scrapped those guys. The three guys who would have been honorable mentions for me to get it up to 18 were Watson, who I had over Francis. They basically put up the same exact numbers for the year, but EB just did it on a way lower usage and was super efficient compared to Francis. I would have had Francis anyway, and then the last guy would have been Dom Welch over Jalen Attaway in just a battle of the Bonnies role players. The stats for the two of them are basically identical, except for the fact that Welch just had a better shooting percentage. My final spot, and I cannot believe that I'm going to say this, because he's a human revolving door on defense. But Taylor Funk closed the year so
well. Oh, my God.
For that red-hot St. Joe's team. I had to ignore the fact that it literally pains me that he plays center. And I flipped on this three times during the Richmond game tonight because he was just lighting infernos around that three-point arc throughout the game. And then it would go to the other end of the court, and Nathan Kao, of all people, was destroying them in the post, just pushing everyone around that they would put on. They wouldn't even try Taylor Funk on him. That's how little they trust him on defense, is they would not put him on a decent power forward who was posting up everyone in sight. But I couldn't bring myself to put anyone else on there. The Ibby numbers were just not quite there compared to Funk, who was really just excellent on the offensive end, all conference play. He had at least 13 points, at least 5 boards in all but one conference game this year. He finished in the top 5 in scoring. And to me, I guess I was really kind of willing to overlook part of the defense because he is such an excellent rebounder. Even though he doesn't cover the paint well at all, he does manage to always get himself in there to clean up the defensive boards. So when I saw those numbers, I was willing to upgrade him from horrible Trey Young level defender to just below average. And he was so great on offense this year that I overlooked it.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't really consider him much just because of how bad St. Joe's was. But honestly, I probably should have given him more consideration because he did average 17.6 points, which is, I mean, it's not that hard on such an up-tempo team like St. Joe's. But overall, it's just good to see him back. Like, if we had a comeback player of the year award, I think he'd have a good chance at it because he missed almost all of last season. And you're right. He is just a really exciting player to watch. It's kind of funny, too. You mentioned how he's not really known for his defensive abilities in the post.
Flat out stinks.
Well, yeah, but I looked him up on ESPN. They list him as a guard on ESPN.com, which is pretty hilarious. So does St. Joe's just play 5 guards then?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of being cruel to him on this, but I'm really trying to hammer home the point that I've really, really value defense. And just to tell you how bad I think he is on this end just goes to show how transcendent I thought he was as an offensive player. And like I said, I tried to not really think that hard about team stuff this year. I think I've fallen victim to that a little too much in the past. But the 3-game win streak really kind of helped him out. Fact that they showed life at the end of the season and you saw how great he was with just a little bit of help on that side, that when he had Hall and Daly and the three of them were playing together, he really helped to elevate them.
Yeah. No, I mean, that pick makes sense. And I think, I don't know if he's going to make the real team, but that's not that bad of a selection at all. He is really good on offense. And yeah, the defense, I don't know. Maybe that'll get better next year. But yeah, St. Joe's, they'll just a nightmare on defense. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else really. I mean, I guess one more guy that we haven't really talked about. I consider Noah Fernandes. If he averaged the triple nickel for the season, I would have given a spot to him, but he ended up falling a little bit short, so couldn't give it to him. Not too many other guys, though. I felt like there were a solid group of about like 20 players that were kind of separated from the rest.
So a few guys I just want to throw out here that I considered and why I didn't take them. Jameson Battle, who's actually kind of a reach, but he put up great numbers this year. And when he plays well, GW as a whole plays well, but he's super inconsistent. He never goes to the hoop, which, you know, I think me and Petey Buckets might need to spend like an hour on that single topic over the summer. He will be so good if he attacks the basket next year. But just too inconsistent. Kyungjoon Lee, who still put up pretty good numbers for the year, but he just completely fell off in conference play. This Carter Collins, kind of the same thing. I wouldn't have minded rewarding another Davidson player. Like I said, I think that was a great group effort. And the fact that I don't think Grady was that particularly special for them, certainly could have found a second guy in that group to put on there. Just couldn't do it for either of them because they kind of slipped. Welch and Attaway, I guess I already mentioned them. Hassan French, the foul trouble was just too much this year. Ryan Daly, I briefly thought about it for like 30 seconds. He just didn't play anywhere near enough games. I think those are really the big ones. The Bishop and Fats, I think, are the two that a lot of people are going to be surprised if they finish third team or don't make it at all for the real conference. And when you just dig into the efficiency numbers, they were just guys who pounded the rock all season.
Yeah, honestly, there is one more guy I thought about for a little bit, but then when I looked at his counting stats and just dug into the numbers more, they weren't quite as good as I was expecting. But I don't know, just from like watching Rhode Island play, I thought Jeremy Shepard had a pretty good season. He ended up shooting almost 40% from three, but only averaged 11 points a game. And just, I don't think he had enough usage on offense to get that much consideration from me. But I guess he's a senior, so he won't be back next year unless he uses the eligibility. But I don't know. I didn't consider him that much, but I did think he had a good season for Rhodey.
I actually went far enough to check Antoine Walker's stats.
Well, he just doesn't.
Before I realized they were so much worse than I thought they were.
Yeah.
Him, Luka Brankovic, like legitimately deserves consideration, but he's probably like the 22nd guy in this race. Yeah, I guess that's it. I glanced at Tyler Burton for a brief moment.
Yeah.
Just all kind of guys who were good, but just not all conference level.
Yeah, I think that's about it. I don't know. Not too many other guys, unless I'm missing someone. I don't think we missed anyone obvious, though.
No.
We did, okay.
Definitely not.
All right.
We're getting a little long on time. We'll kind of speed round the rest of this. All defensive team. For me, three super obvious. Ashun, Gilliard, Goodwin. Got to be on there. My next guy ended up being Ace Baldwin. And it was kind of tough because him and Bones, when you go back and look, really kind of split the tough assignments on the perimeters. Ace was a bigger factor in like the Bonaventure games. Bones was a bigger factor in the Dayton games. And you really could reward either of them. In the end, I basically just gave Ace the tiebreaker because of the steals numbers. And then my last guy was AJ Wilson. I thought about Hassan Ward, but then you realize he actually plays a lot more of a free safety role. And this really kind of rang true in the Davidson game, where Luka Brankovic just had Stockard and Douglas in the torture chamber all game, and they never tried Ward on him at all. And when you go back and look at the film, that was kind of the story of the year, is the big centers took a lot of the toughest assignments, and Ward was an awesome defensive player, and he blocked a ton of shots, but he was more so kind of roaming. He didn't necessarily have the biggest assignments all year, so I couldn't do it. I ended up giving the last spot to AJ Wilson for anchoring what ended up being a pretty decent Mason defense and putting up a ton of blocks.
Yeah, we came really close to having the same team. So I had Oshun, Gilliard, and Goodwin as well. And then Ace Baldwin, too. I think he's going to end up. He could be very well be the next Jacob Gilliard in this conference because I think he led the league in steal rate, which is really impressive for a freshman. I actually did end up going with Hassan Ward for VCU, my second VCU player. And I don't know, I think you're right about his free safety role, but I almost view that as more of a positive, just him being so versatile. I mean, he's 6'9 with a huge wingspan, but he's so quick out there. And I just think that almost, even though maybe he's not constantly guarding the other team's best post player, I still think that makes him one of the most valuable players, just being able to play on the perimeter too. I thought about AJ Wilson. I kind of snubbed him last year, and I'm going to do the same thing this year. I don't know, just looking into the stats more, Mason did have an improved defense, and Wilson was still a good shot blocker, but They didn't defend the rim particularly well. They actually got a lot of help on the perimeter. Guys like Tyler Kolek and Javon Green put up some good defensive numbers. So Wilson probably would have been my next choice. Just didn't quite make it for me. But yeah, overall, it seems like we don't disagree too much on these.
Yeah, and Wilson honestly kind of just slid into that last spot. A lot of the great defensive centers just were not the same this year. French couldn't stay on the court. Michael Hughes was super inconsistent. I was really close to going with Ward. Honestly, it's just one of those things that it bothered me that in the games where the other team's center was playing really well, that Ward never got that assignment. So I had to downgrade him a little bit for that.
Yeah, I ended up picking two VCU players. I thought about taking two Bonnies just because they had such a great team defense too. If I had to go with anyone, I don't know. I've always liked Dominic Welch on defense. I think he's one of the better wings, and usually we kind of fall into the trap of getting centers that block a lot of shots and guards that get a lot of steals, but I think Welch has always just been a good all-around player. And just with the Bonnies being such a good perimeter defensive team this year, I thought about giving him a look, but ended up falling a little bit short for me.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Lofton and Welch were both under consideration for me. I guess really the only other one was Fats from the guard position. Just not a tremendous depth of individual defenders this year. It was a lot of great team defenses where guys just really didn't stand out.
Yeah.
I'm bummed out Rodney Chapman got hurt too, because he had that spot at the end of the non-conference and he just didn't play enough.
Yeah, no, I agree. Definitely would have considered him more, but I think he only ended up with like four conference games, so that just wasn't enough. But all right, ready to move on to all rookie.
Yep, so for me, the first two, super obvious. Ace Baldwin, terrific all-around player. The scoring numbers are low, but he racked up a ton of assists and was definitely the best two-way rookie. Best defensive rookie that I can remember in years. And so I'm willing to just completely overlook the 6 points a game. That's an easy pick for me. Mustafa Amziel, who was also like Taylor Funk, a revolving door on defense, but
I'm
was
gonna
so
disagree
transcendent.
on that.
Oh, he just go back and watch the first St. Louis game. It was ugly. That was his worst. I do not trust Amziel on defense at all, but he was fantastic on the offensive end. He carried them through a few games, crashed the boards hard. The stats ended up kind of lowering because he had a few games where he was just non-existent, but he's going to be an offensive force in this conference for years to come. Really put up the best stats of any rookie. So I'll start with those two. Those were the ones that were just completely obvious to me.
Yeah, I agree. I had those two also. Very easy picks. Next for me, really the last three. Also, I have one more obvious pick, which I don't know if he'd be obvious for everyone, but I thought Jordan Hall for St. Joe's, averaging a triple nickel's huge. He hit a triple double this season. Just a great all around player, and it really, I don't know. It bothers me in some ways that St. Joe's had a bad season, but you're right. They did finish on a winning streak, and he's a big part of that. Last two picks were kind of tough, and I rotated between a couple guys, but I had Jahmyr Bricus and Tyler Kolek for those.
So, quick apologies to Andre Harris and Zimi Nwokedji, who just didn't play enough and put up big enough stats, even though I'm a huge fan of both those guys. And then Gibson Jimerson, Ishmael Leggett were probably the next wave, and Ronnie DeGray. For me, it was really just six guys fighting for five spots. My next guy is the one that you left off out of that group, which is Chad Baker. And really, for me, I just kind of think a lot of these guys were even. A lot of them just put up moderate stats. And so I want to reward Baker for his big game ability and the fact that he kind of carried Duquesne through two or three times when their offense was dead. His 3-point shooting was absolutely critical to that team. And this is another one where I think you kind of forgive him for just the numbers not being as good overall as they could have been. And a lot of that just being due to COVID, the fact that Duquesne only played two non-conference games, Baker didn't really get it going until game seven. Well, that was already the second third of their season. So basically just threw away six games this year, threw off a lot of his averages. He was the next guy for me. And then I went back and forth so many times between the last three. And thank you to our guy, Matt Ryan, over at A10 Stats for adding Jordan Hull to his graph. I asked him for that solely for my own evaluation. I ended up taking Hall and Brickus over Kolek. Brickus tailed off a lot in the A10. I had him off for a while, but in the end, I ended up taking him because of the defense. Jordan Hall, just the all-around skill, the crashing the boards. The fact that he got over six assists a game on a St. Joe's team without that many offensively talented guys is super impressive. So it hurts me to leave Tyler Kolek off, but it was more so I just like the other three better than him. It was nothing against Kolek's performance.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. I've seen a lot of respect for Kolek in the Rookie of the Year race. I don't know. I think he's a great player. He's a really good three-point shooter, but I didn't quite see him that way. And maybe I should have given him more credit since George Mason started playing well at the end of the year. But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like for Brickus, I really wanted to put him on just because I felt like he provided the spark for LaSalle in a lot of games where, you know, they could have been really bad without him. And I know they won a couple big games and he didn't always play well in those. Like he didn't even score against St. Louis, but and a lot of their losses, I mean, the second St. Louis game, I guess he had 22 points. I don't know. I just think he's had some really big moments for LaSalle, both offense and defense. And I think he's just got a lot of potential on both ends of the court, really. Otherwise, I don't know. Gibson Jimerson was an interesting one. And I guess he's eligible this year. I just felt like St. Louis
hard in conference play.
He did. He just didn't have a huge role all the time. I mean, it seemed like he'd be good for like two transition threes a game, but it just felt like St. Louis was a pretty well-balanced offense for most of the year. And I don't know. I mean, he definitely had an important role on that team, but just felt like he didn't quite take enough shots.
But, yeah, I came to the same conclusion. So last big debate, and then we'll rapid fire the final awards. Rookie of the year, I had to take Ace.
This was really tough.
It was brutal. I was willing to ignore the offensive statistics. Like I said, we just have not had a rookie in a long time who is this excellent on both ends of the ball.
Yeah.
Defense is the tiebreaker for me on this one.
See, I think for me, I went into this one with a tie going into the final weekend, I think, with Baldwin and Amsel. And Baldwin really didn't play that well against Davidson. I kind of held that against him. Still had a really great season, but
He almost single-handedly won them the SLU game, though.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he had some great games this year, and I think a lot of people like might just see his stats and not realize how important he is. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clearly like him and Amsel for the top two spots, the way I see it. But overall, I had to go with Amsel. I just think his scoring and rebounding stats were really impressive for a freshman that just joined the team in the middle of the season. And he just had such an important role on Dayton too. I know he came off the bench the last couple games, but he's been getting a lot of minutes the whole way. And I don't think his defense is quite as bad. I think it's inconsistent. Like against St. Louis and VCU, he had a couple awful defensive games, but I feel like he moves his feet pretty well at times. He's rebounded decently well, so I don't know. I wouldn't put him in the Taylor Funk category, that's for sure. But I had to go with Amsel there.
He was the runner-up. Like I said, defense ended up being the tiebreaker. So we'll rapid-fire these. Some of these coaches' awards, some of them media awards, some of them both. Sixth Man of the Year was a crapshoot this year. Basically, it was just pick your random SLU guy or Jameer Watkins. TJ Weeks didn't shoot well enough for me. I still love TJ Weeks, but his shooting percentages were way too bad to give him it. You could have cheated and found a way to get Hassan Ward or Sharif Kenny the award. Both were kind of half starters. To me, they weren't good enough to cheat. This wasn't Kyle Davis a few years ago. I took Fred Thatch. Just so excellent on defense, plays a lot of crunch time for St. Louis, and has honestly given them some very timely buckets, even though his counting stats are pretty poor.
Yeah, I wanted to take Demarius Jacobs for St. Louis, and I kind of agree. I think this award was kind of just pick your Billiken. But Jacobs really felt off in conference play, and I felt like Thatch established himself as the best bench player, so I went with him too.
I cannot believe we both had that one.
Yeah, that actually is. I knew you liked Thatch, and I honestly had a tough time, and you tweeted this earlier how last year it was clearly either Perkins or Ibby Watson. This year there were no obvious choices, and maybe it's just the shortened season. No one could really establish themselves as a great choice, but I don't know. I just think Thatch, his rebounding was really impressive for a guard. I just thought when he came on the court for St. Louis, there were a couple games. Like, I know when they lost, he was in it for a while. I think same if you go back to, I want to say the Minnesota game, he played really well too in not that many minutes. Just felt like he was a high-energy guy that was big for them when the team was struggling in a couple of those games. So, yeah, I'm kind of surprised we both had him too, though.
Yeah, for me, it was Thatch, Lindzen, or cheating for Sharif Kenny, which I'm not even sure most people would realize he was a half starter this year.
Yeah. All right, we'll move on to most improved player. This one was pretty tough, too. I ended up going with Vince Williams, though, because last year he really just didn't play that many games at all. So he had a lot of room to go up in my eyes. And the fact that I put him on an all-conference team, I thought he was a pretty good choice. I also thought about Jaron Holmes, but Holmes was still pretty solid last year. So I just felt like overall Williams had a bigger jump.
I thought about those two and Josh Aduro. Runner-up ended up being Tyler Burton, who I think was just fantastic this year after a limited role last season. But to me, it was Bones. He goes from, and this is not customary to give it to a guy who ends up getting other accolades, but he goes from really just an interesting heat check guy who gave them some scoring in batches and was someone that defenses could really disrupt to the clear player of the year, a potential first round NBA prospect. He basically doubled his scoring this year. It was a huge jump when you really look at the difference in the stats. I had to reward him.
Yeah, I didn't think about Bones, honestly, but that's not a bad pick at all. I mean, you could definitely make that argument. I know some people last year even, I feel like a couple people gave it to Obi Toppin in our poll, which, you know, if you want to look at a very good player just going to the next level, that makes sense. So, yeah, that's not a bad choice at all.
Transfer of the year, I took Jalen Attaway. It's basically him, James Bishop, Mekhi Mitchell, Noah Fernandes. I just thought Attaway was the best of those guys. I really value the contributions he gave St. Bonaventure over the empty calorie stats of James Bishop.
Yeah. I went with Noah Fernandes here, the triple nickel machine. I snubbed him from all conference, but I thought this was my chance to give him something. Real quick, actually, I kind of forgot to bring it up earlier, but I had Mekhi Mitchell as sort of a dark horse for all defense team. I thought he was really good in the post for Rhodey, but just couldn't quite put him over some of the other bigs I had. But he had a nice season. Not that great offensively, though, quite yet. But
in the end, he ended up ineligible for all awards for me because he fouled way too much and his minutes were actually just way lower than they should have been.
Exactly. But if he can stay on the court next year, I mean, he could definitely make a jump. But all right, sharpshooter of the year. This is one of, I think we're getting into our own awards now.
Yeah, we are. Except for coach is the only one left, but we'll hit that later.
All right, so after my comments about the Bonnies last week and Lil Bonna X calling me out, calling the Bonnies a bad shooting team, I looked and saw Dom Welch was like third in the conference in shooting, so I knew I couldn't give it to him. I'd be too embarrassed. I just went with Hyungjoon Lee. I'm pretty sure he led the conference, in conference play, I should say, in three-point shooting. And even though his usage went down, he was still a pretty deadly shooter the entire way, so I had to go with him.
I didn't even think about this. If I'm down, if my team's up three on defense on the final possession and a guy flashes open for a three at the top of the key, there's only three guys I'm afraid of. Crutcher and Highland for obvious reasons, and I'd be freaking terrified if Dom Welsh had the ball in his hands.
Yeah,
this easy for me. He is the best role guy shooter in this league, hands down.
See, I just couldn't give him the award, though, after what I said. I'd look like an idiot, like even more than normal. So, but that, I mean, he did have a much better season than I gave him credit for last week. That's for sure.
So, glue guy of the year. I actually went against my own definition of this, even though this award was my idea. This could be the Ryan Meixel award. We should have had this last year for Meixel, but basically it's the guy who holds the team together, the man who does the little things. And for me, I was actually pretty close on Nathan Kale, although I was a little bit bugged by his lack of rebounding this year, only less than three a game, a little alarming for his size, but he just does so many little things for Richmond. He kind of reminds me of Meixel's role on offense. But I ended up giving it to Tavian Dunn-Martin for the reason that he literally held Duquesne together this year. They were falling apart when Sincere Carey left, and we saw Dunn-Martin really not particularly want to pass the ball over the last year and a half. Well, in the 10 games since he really settled into the point guard role, 4.7 assists over those games. If he doesn't do that, Duquesne completely crumbles. They might be in the pillow fight right now. And we're sure as hell not talking about whether or not they could swing an upset over Richmond in the 8-9 game.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick just because of how he had to adapt throughout the season. This is a really tough one, and I have a feeling we're going to get a ton of different responses in our media poll, but I went with Christian Ray here. I just think, I mean, they always called him the Swiss Army Knife every LaSalle game that's on TV, and I just felt like I was so impressed by some of his performances in games where LaSalle was playing horribly as a team, but he was still doing everything he could to keep them in the game. Like, I think about the Fordham game where he had 18 points and 9 rebounds. In that overtime game against St. Joe's, he had 18 and 11. He's also had some decent assist games, too. He had a triple nickel in the first St. Joe's game, so just feel like he's a really good all-around player. He's only 6'6", but it seems like he can guard centers and guards. I mean, he gets a lot of rebounds. Top 10 in offensive and defensive rebounding rate in the conference, which is pretty unique for a player like him. And just a guy that can play a ton of different roles. So I went with him. Not the most talented player, but certainly one of the most versatile.
Yeah, that's one that I didn't even consider. Good one.
I mean, I feel like, I don't know. If I had to make a guess, like, who would win this, I have no idea, honestly. There are a lot of good for you guys, but
it was really it's just so many different options this year. No one particularly standing out the way Meixel did last season.
Yeah. All right. What do we have next?
Oh, I guess the other ones could have been Attaway and Welch could have certainly been guys there too, but
you could. All right, Super Senior Award, which I don't know. I mean, I guess this is kind of just the best senior. I don't know. I try to look at it more than that. And I had like six guys as an option for this. I think any one of them would be a good choice. But after watching him play in the St. Louis game with that huge brace on his hand, I had to go with Grant Golden. I mean, just playing through a pretty serious injury down the stretch of the season, clearly he wants to go to the tournament, and I know he's going to tough it out in the conference tournament too. I think just the fact that he's been playing for Richmond for such a long time now, can't even keep track of how many years it's been, and that he's playing through injuries at this point in his career, I had to go with him. Just the intangibles for me sold that pick.
I took Jalen Crutcher. He put the team on his back like a cartoon Marshawn Lynch. So many times he had to adjust his game to do what had to be done. That's an exemplary senior to me.
Yeah. I don't know. This is going to sound super hypocritical. I didn't pick Crutcher because of all the bad games that Dayton lost, but Richmond kind of lost the same bad games.
Yeah, same thing happened.
Although I made this pick before they lost to St. Joe's, and I didn't think that was going to happen. I don't care. I'm still going with Grant Golden. But I mean, I think Crusher is a good pick. I think Goodwin would have been a great pick too. Marcus Weathers, Calvin Grady. I think any one of those guys, honestly. Just depending on how you look at it, who is the most important to their team.
Top NBA prospect. I said Bones Highland. The next one would have been Goodwin. I'm not even going to go into it because to do this justice, this is a lengthy conversation.
Yeah.
And I want to save it for the off season.
Yeah. I went for Bones. I just think anyone that can shoot 30 foot threes has a chance. So
I'm already ready for that pod. I'm excited for it. I got a lot to talk about with it, but it's right. Tonight is not the night. Coach of the year. I took Mike Rhodes. Ashley Howard could have made an argument till they fell into the pillow fight, but it's Rhodes versus Schmidt. Schmidt deserves a lot of consideration. I want to note, Rhodes is absolutely going to win this on the conference awards because he fits the narrative that always wins. But Mark Schmidt assembled this terrific team. He found guys who fit together perfectly. In the end, I ended up giving it to Rhodes just because I think that he spun complete gold out of what was probably more bronze, while Mark Schmidt took the time to dig up the piece of gold and spent this year just really shining it to perfection. I guess you can value either one, but I was hard on Mike Rhodes last year, and he did a terrific job pulling that team out of the depths after last season's horrible finish. And to me, the tiebreaker was really pulling them out after how bad they were in February of last year and resurrecting that team from the grave.
I just want to say Dave Paulson got his team into sixth place this year. I'm not picking him, but yeah.
Dave Paulson also could have gotten them into sixth place just normally. He had to create a bunch of drama to do it.
I think it's Mike Rhodes pretty easily for me. I think Schmidt's a good case too, but to me, and I know we always talk about the COVID season, like there's no off season. How are young teams going to do? But looking at VCU in the preseason, like they had no business being one of the best teams in the conference. That's why no one picked them there. So I think he was able to just get the most out of a lot of these players. And yeah, I think that's a pretty easy choice for me. So I think last up, we have our game of the year, which this one's always fun. I guess I can start here. And full disclosure, I mean, I've talked about this. Didn't get to watch quite as many games this year as I would have liked. So I tried to limit it to games where I saw most of it. And I don't know. It wasn't the most consequential, but I think I had the most fun watching St. Joe's beat LaSalle in overtime with technical fouls, an ejection, a buzzer beater. Just a wild game all around. I don't care that it was two pillow fighters. I'm so excited we get round three this week. Gotta go with the Hawks here.
I was so close. To me, there's just no great game this year. I deeply considered three. Dayton Davidson was a far runner up. It was a fun game. There was a lot of drama. It really came down to two. It was that, which I ended up typing down and taking off. It was my runner up. That game was so freaking fun. Howard got tossed. LaSalle blew it like three different ways. St. Joe's came back from the dead. Everyone was shooting well. Guys were missing layups. No one had any desire to block a shot. I ended up taking the Bonaventure VCU game, the first one in Olean. And I think part of it for me is last year we had so many great choices of just the Dayton Inferno games where the Flyers just went nuclear and the offense was so beautiful to watch. And this reminded me of that. It was the one game where we really got to see it. That was the everything clicking for St. Bonaventure, outscoring VCU by 25 in the second half. There was no drama at the end of the game, but for 12 minutes, the Bonnies looked like they could have beaten Gonzaga.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good game. I guess one more, which I didn't pick it because I didn't get to see that much of it, but VCU beating Rhode Island on the road, getting the monkey off their back, Bones hitting a clutch three-pointer in the final seconds of that game. That was a really big one, too. I mean, if I was a Rhode Island
fan. There was another good game on at that time. I definitely remember turning that on with 2 minutes left.
I'm pretty sure St. Louis was losing to LaSalle when that happened, didn't they? Because I was definitely watching that.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. I chose the train wreck over the majesty.
Yeah, I did too. I couldn't take my eyes away. But I'm trying to think. I mean, you know, I hated it, but Rhode Island making a huge comeback on Dayton, like, I'm sure that was exciting for them. I wasn't going to pick it, but I don't know. There were a lot of good games, just not – it's just different this year, I guess, with, like, we didn't have a transcendent team like Dayton. But there were – did you mention St. Bonaventure beating Richmond?
I thought about that. That was definitely the best final play of the year.
Yeah.
The other one I threw in was Dayton-LaSalle, like – it was kind of a fun game, and I think we forget too, that was the – oh my god, Mustafa – no one was saying Mustafa because no one had any idea what his name was.
Yeah,
but he was so great in that game, no one had any idea who the hell he was. LaSalle beats them at the buzzer. It was such a stunning upset at the time. It was a really interesting game. It's been so long ago, though. It's over 2 months ago, if you can believe that already.
No, those were all good ones. I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully we get some more good games this week coming up. But, yeah, I think we're going to get a lot of different responses to that, too, because last year it was pretty clearly, I think, Dayton.
It was the clutcher St. game. Louis.
Yeah, because that one was on ESPN. A lot of people watched it. I think this year there were a lot more good choices, though.
Oh, that was the other one for me, was Dayton SLU at Chaffetz, and I almost took it, but I think, honestly, I think that was – would have just been a homer pick.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going homer pick, it's Dayton senior night against St. Louis. That was fun. But, yeah, anyway. St. Joe's LaSalle, though. God. Ashley Howard getting tossed twice this season in a span of three games is legendary. And I think, you know, for years Dr. John was my favorite non-Dayton coach in the A-10. I think now it's got to be Ashley Howard going back to LaSalle. That's just been such a fun team, and him getting thrown out is a part of that.
Yeah, I will not fight you on that pick. I almost took it myself, so I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Always one of our busiest pods of the year. Tough to split the time on this. We hope that we covered everything that you guys wanted to hear between awards, tournament preview, and wrapping up a crazy, crazy, crazy last week filled with Silence of the Lamb memes. We will be back multiple times this week. I'm not 100% sure how the format of the episodes is going to go, but I would certainly expect to hear from us Thursday night, Friday night, and either Saturday night or on Sunday, with those games being late. Not fully sure yet. Matt, anything else you want to add before we go into the tournament here?
I hope Dayton wins a game. It's been a long time. I thought they were going to do it last year, but didn't get the chance. So I just got to give a little homer shout out. I think this might be the year we make it to the quarterfinals.
Certainly can't disagree with that. I'm excited. You're excited. Everybody's excited. Even the pillow fight might be fun this year. So we thank you all for sharing in the excitement. We thank you for listening to the 3-Bid League podcast. If you've enjoyed it, give us 5 stars on iTunes, or at least 4. We're willing to let you be a little 4? Bit stingy.
Huh.
I'm in a happy mood. I'd take a 4 right now. Leave us any comments on there. Anything you think we could be doing better. Anything that you enjoy that we're doing. Everybody enjoy the weekend. Ton of basketball to come. Stay safe out there.